Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 12:11 on this Monday afternoon, the Wintrust Business Lunch. We come to you from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It's Monday, and that's when the boys from Chicago Inno are here, so we'll kick things around with them. Scott Kleinberg will be along a little bit later to talk social media. And one of the stories that Scott and I were emailing back and forth today, talking about Vice President Biden's sort of threat to take on Russia when it comes to cyber attacks. And then lo and behold, we find out this morning that Julian Assange's internet access was cut off by the cable guy, apparently. So we'll see if that's related. We'll talk to Kleinberg about that coming up. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno are in the studio. Welcome, boys.
Hey, Steve. Welcome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Did you guys work last week even though I wasn't here?
No, we took it off.
Did you?
If Steve's not working, I'm not working.
Right, we're mailing it in.
You usually mail it in, huh? All right, so Blackhawks are off today. They are taking on Philadelphia at the United Center tomorrow, but their doctors are working. There's this story about this new startup called Shift that's coming from one of the Blackhawks doctors, not one of the dentists, right?
No. So, yeah, the Blackhawks have a big team of medical professionals, 14, in fact, three dentists, believe it or not, because, you know, hockey. But one of the doctors, Ari Levy, he's an internist for the Blackhawks, and he is launching his own startup, which is going to be a brick-and-mortar healthcare facility here in Chicago, doing a lot of interesting things, kind of bringing a level of comprehensive care that you might see as a professional athlete to the regular people like you and me.
And so we would buy a subscription to this, or how would this work?
Right, so it's going to be a membership-based model. They haven't done the pricing yet, but basically what it is it'll be a facility opening in early 2017 that provides a bunch of healthcare professionals all under one roof. So think fitness trainers, doctors, coaches, nutritionists, recovery specialists.
Yoga, all in forget the yoga.
Exactly. So basically think of this place as like part gym, part doctor's office, part physical therapy center, really providing specific patient care across a range of specialists.
It's a really cool startup idea, but I'm very excited when they announce the pricing, because I think that's going to really define what this company and model is. Because if it's accessible and universal, I love it. And I can't wait to see it scale and launch in every city. I would love to get all of these things in under one roof. I have a feeling it's going to be more of a luxury item, which makes it a cool idea, but not kind of as universal.
Well,
as
but it might to have to start kind of fat in order to slim down.
Yeah,
right?
Hopefully. And I think, you know, Jim, when you let off a story saying, like, you know, one of the Blackhawks' many doctors, like, to me, many doctors is four. Like, 14 doctors is a ton of doctors. So it's cool. It's such a great startup idea when you're in this environment and you're able to acknowledge, like, wow, this niche thing that's happening, I can find a way to scale. But so I love the idea.
You're not going to go there for when your appendicitis is hurting, right? You're going to go there when you're saying, I want a lifestyle change, and this is sort of a wellness center for you to do all of that.
Exactly. And I mean, they say that their sort of ideal clientele is really everyone, but I guess if you kind of have to narrow it down, it's really people who maybe have a chronic condition that they're trying to, you know, exactly like you said, sort of change their lifestyle, and everything from nutrition to weightlifting to the recovery after your exercise.
Yeah, and one of the – where I think this is a really smart idea is, especially for people living in Chicago, you look around, you see all of these cranes. Every building that's going up has a gym in it. I live in not a big building, and it has a gym in it. This is something that's becoming pretty widespread and ubiquitous. So the idea of, like, I don't necessarily need a gym membership, but maybe I need a wellness membership. Maybe I need something to just kind of supplement.
Right, so it's a little, it's like a health club plus a little bit.
Exactly, yeah.
With some people giving you advice that's actually worth listening to.
100%.
That is Shift, and it's coming, when did you say, next year?
Early 2017.
All right, tell me about this remote year, because this sounds like the wildest thing.
Yeah, remote year is a great idea from a startup that really kind of, to me, felt like a quirky idea and got some real funding. So remote year is a startup that allows you to work at your job remotely for a year. They will take you to a different city across the world for 12 months. So you go to 12 different cities traveling the world. They're letting you work remotely so you can continue working at your job. I could still be at Chicago and writing stories every day, but traveling the world through remote year and kind of giving you this platform to travel and work.
Yeah, it's $2,000 a month. They've set up everything, where you're living, where you're working. You'll have relationships with co-working spaces. They've set up travel plans and visits. So the idea that work remotely. You know, if you're a designer or a freelancer, travel the world while, you know, still holding on to that career. Because I love that idea of being able, you know, that the like taking a year off. It's either I'm going to keep working or I'm going to see the world. And I kind of like that he's creating a middle ground.
So, I mean, I could just take my U.S. robotics modem and travel around the world and work, right? What is it that they do differently?
What remote year does differently?
So yeah, if it's just internet access, I could go anywhere and do it myself. What is it that sets these guys
apart?
Certainly.
I think there's a few things. One is just the initiative. I mean, I think everybody wants to work and travel, but you don't really have a plan necessarily. It takes a lot of figuring out your itinerary and what you're going to do. Remote year says, okay, you're committing to this. You're putting the money down. We're going to lead you the way and show you, like, walk with you step by step and kind of show you how to effectively work remotely.
Yeah, and the relationship of the co-working spaces, as well as the fact that it's a group of 75, so that you're kind of in this weird little model together.
Do you go month to month with the 75?
Yeah, it's a group of 75 for the year.
I don't mean to keep interrupting.
Oh, yeah, no, of course.
I thought maybe they were just, everyone was on their own schedule around the world, but you're saying the 75 will spend a month in Madrid and then go on to Lisbon or something like that.
Yeah. Right. Wow. Yeah, they travel together.
Yep, and the startup just last week raised $12 million.
And what's really cool about this is, to kind of Jim's point earlier, is when we've been writing about remote year and love the idea, but it almost felt in a way like some of the Kickstarters we cover. Like, oh, this is a really fun idea, but I never kind of like saw the business behind it. But I think, one, $12 million is significant funding, and two, some of the names associated with the raise. The WeWork co-founder Jesse Middleton and Airbnb's co-founder and CTO Nate Bukarczyk?
CTO of Airbnb. So, I mean, that's like,
yeah,
when you think,
those are big, big companies, yeah, who have done this, who have taken real big global ideas and have expanded.
And they will partner. This group Remote Year hopes to partner with existing businesses.
Maybe
too,
you
right?
Imagine that's one of the reasons WeWork got involved, is they're probably working out of WeWorks around the world in Airbnb. Maybe that's where they're staying. So these are strategic investments as well.
And companies today see a benefit by giving this as like a perk to their employees too. So partnering with Remote Year and, you know, these Fortune 500 businesses, they gave this to their employees as a perk.
It's not cheap though.
No, it's not. It's a $5,000 deposit and then $2,000 a month. So it depends on if you've still got your place back stateside, if you're kind of paying the double rent there.
It's not cheap, but $2,000 a month. I mean, you know, a lot of people are close to hitting that anyways, especially if you're living downtown in Chicago or if you're living in New York or San Francisco.
And it's covering your travel and all of that, right?
Yeah, it's covering everything.
Super cool. I want to do this.
Yeah,
I just think it sounds like so much fun. All right, that's Will Flanagan, Jim Dahlke here from Chicago Inno. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will talk about the inaugural NOU Challenge just completed. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. My name is Steve Bertrand. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno are here, as well as they are most Mondays. So I think a few Mondays ago, we talked about this NOU Challenge. The inaugural event came up, right? When was it, last week or the week
before? Yeah, we talked about it last week as well when you were gallivanting in Ireland,
yeah.
Steve. We talked all about the NOU, and we were so excited for this event. So it was first one we did. And it was a showcase and pitch competition for student entrepreneurs throughout Chicago. And we kind of stumbled into the realization that we were going to all of these terrific pitch competitions at universities, at UChicago, at DePaul, at Northwestern. And they're all great, but they're for their network, right? They're siloed. It's UChicago's network, UChicago startups, and same with the other universities. And we kind of realized by covering all of these, we were in this position to be able to bring all these student entrepreneurs for kind of the first time under the same roof. So we did this pitch competition. We had 15 startups, 2 to 3 from each school, from UChicago, DePaul, Northwestern, UIC, UIUC, and Illinois Institute of Technology. And it was amazing. I mean, these aren't just hey, here's a gadget that makes our beer fridge stay on longer.
This helps me open the popcorn bag.
Yeah, this is virtual reality for healthcare. One of my favorites was Therapals, which is making these robotic stuffed animals that are designed specifically for Alzheimer's patients that buzz in a unique way to calm them down, and they have like really interesting science and technology that have been proven to really help people who are you know starting to lose it a little bit, to really calm them and help them feel like they sure. they are not alone. And then there is another company we heard from, Embodied Labs, that is creating virtual reality environments for people that are also suffering from dementia. We heard from just a number of these companies that are really tackling these big, bold problems. And it was really inspiring to see 18 to 19 to 20-year-olds just diving in headfirst.
Yeah, and the winner of the inaugural pitch competition was a startup called Grapevine, which is doing some really cool stuff. The founder is Maria MacIver, and she's from the University of Illinois, Chicago. And she's got a platform that connects users to hairstylists in the black hair care market through an app that shows where stylists who can do your specific type of hair right. are closest to you. So, I mean, a lot of people in the black hair care market go to a salon, and that salon might not have somebody who's equipped to handle their specific needs. So this pairs you with somebody who's capable of doing your hair, which was a great idea.
Okay, I got to ask, because you're talking about people helping people with Alzheimer's and all of these things, but the winner helps you get a haircut. So obviously the criteria is not, you know, how to further humanity, right? So what is it when you guys are looking at this? To when you make the award, what are the standards? Sort of.
Totally, great question. And it comes down to the presentation, but it was also, you know, she's tackling a real problem that I think a lot of people in the audience identified with.
So it was audience participation. So the audience got to put a little buck, you know, a fake dollar bill into the different baskets.
I mean, something that has a real impact on people.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone got an Inno buck when they came, and at the end of the presentations, they invested their Inno bucks in their favorite presentation, and the most funded startup won the InnoU challenge.
Okay.
So great. Vine was the most funded startup.
Someone tell me about Shaq, because I think that sounds kind of cool.
Yeah.
Shaq is a really interesting idea. You can kind of think about it as like an Airbnb for free for college students. It's kind of strange. So basically, it's for commuting college students. So think about a student who lives in St. Charles, Illinois, and goes to DePaul. They have to go home back to St. Charles every day on the train. They're really missing out on a lot of school experiences by
homework,
in the
study
city.
Groups.
Exactly.
Parties.
So they are out and they don't get to be a part of that lifestyle. What they can do with Shaq is basically couch surf for free in exchange for like a service. So they say, okay, let me stay at your house for two nights of the week and I will wash your dishes or walk the dog. It's kind of like a free Airbnb for college students.
And is it working, or is it just
they are building it. They're getting off the ground. I think they're just about to launch in their beta right now. And it came from two commuting college students at DePaul. It was a need that they felt that wasn't being met.
Yeah, but seriously, Jim, who would commute from St. Charles every day?
Oh, right. You'd have to be a fool, right? Oh, Jim Dahlke does. Yeah. Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan. Great to see you guys again. We'll do it again next Monday. This is the Business Lunch on 7. Now it's time for you to start driving home on 720 WGN. It's 12:37. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right. So, you know, in the campaign, everyone's talking about WikiLeaks and these document dumps. And they've most recently had to do with John Podesta, who's involved in the Clinton campaign. And the investigators say it's probably from Russia. Russia is feeding them then to Julian Assange from WikiLeaks. And then over the weekend, Vice President Biden kind of had a bit of a threat when it comes to that. Scott Kleinberg is on the phone line with us now. He talks about social media with us from time to time. Scott, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, so we've got Joe Biden, the vice president, sort of saying that we're going to put the hammer down coming up soon against Russia, perhaps. And then today there's word that someone turned off Julian Assange's internet machine. Or what exactly is going on here?
Yeah, it's kind of unclear right now, but, you know, it depends on who you're reading on Twitter. But people are basically saying just that. His internet connection is down. There were three kind of cryptic tweets that WikiLeaks sent out. And when that happened, everybody thought that Julian Assange, well, not everybody, but the people on Twitter thought that Julian Assange was dead. And it turns out that's not true. Even WikiLeaks said this morning that he's fine and there's nothing wrong. They are saying, though, that his internet connection is down and that it was done by some kind of state party. So everybody thinks that the DNC has taken down his his Twitter, his internet access to make sure that he doesn't release anything else. And there's all kinds of things out there.
Would it be, I guess we don't know. So, hey, let's just speculate together.
Yeah, that's always fun.
It wouldn't be the DNC, right? If they're saying it's a state group, it would be the U.S. government, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. And people out there, they say one thing and they read something else, and it's just crazy. But no, it seems to, and there's a meme out there saying that maybe he forgot to pay the cable bill. He's holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy, and they're saying, well, you know, you got to pay the bill or else, and, you know, there's that. So right now, just we don't know what is actually causing it, but you know, it looks like they're still releasing things, and it's not really affecting anything. And you know,
oh, okay, so WikiLeaks isn't disabled at all. It's just his personal.
No.
And so, how does this jibe with what Vice President Biden said yesterday?
You know, just that he's saying that they're going to look into what Russia is doing with this. Russia is saying that they have absolutely nothing to do with it, and they're going to, like you're saying, bring the hammer down. And, right. You know, it all kind of remains to be seen right now. Nothing has really moved on that front. The only thing that has really happened is that all of a sudden Julian Assange can't get on the internet and people are automatically thinking the worst.
All right. So there's that. And it really has to do in some ways. I mean, it's a pretty dramatic thing. It does look as if the government of Russia is trying to impact the U.S. election, which isn't a small thing. I think so many things with Donald Trump this year have been so remarkable that sometimes we don't take a step back to consider what's really happening. And that's one of them. The other is that you've got a candidate for president, in this case, Donald Trump, who is late night tweeting many times. And most recently, he's tweeting now against the Saturday Night Live, which, again, if you think of it, the guy is running for president, might be president, and he's using his time to tweet against Saturday Night Live and calling it a very boring program. He didn't like Alec Baldwin's account of him?
He didn't like Alec Baldwin's account of him. He says he is constantly saying over and over again that the media is rigging this election. And if he loses, the only reason to lose is because the media is rigging the election. He is now classifying Saturday Night Live as one of those media outlets, saying that they are in cahoots doing the exact same thing. But a year ago, or just shy of a year ago, Donald Trump was the host of Saturday Night Live, and of course, tweets live on forever, and he tweeted, amazing evening at Saturday Night Live, love Saturday Night Live. Now he hates it. Now it's a boring show. Now it's time to go off the air after 41 years. From a personal standpoint, I think Alec Baldwin does a pretty darn good Donald Trump, but, you know, he apparently doesn't agree.
And so it's just, you know, to imagine then the equivalent would be Hillary Clinton going after Kate McKinnon for her account of her impersonation, and that she would do that is just kind of, it's completely outrageous, but it's outrageous.
And Hillary Clinton has said repeatedly that she thinks Kate McKinnon does a really good job.
Right. Scott, I doubt that's true. That's the way you respond to those things.
That's exactly right. That's the way you respond to them. And people online were not backing up Donald Trump on this at all. They were saying exactly what you said. You know, how do you have time to be complaining about Saturday Night Live? Are you really unable to tell fact from fiction and realize when people are just making fun? You know, he's not getting the support that he thought he would get by coming out against them.
Okay, I doubt that this is related to his opposition, but there was going to be a Law & Order SVU.
SVU, yeah.
having to do with Donald Trump, and they put it off, or what's going on there?
Yeah, they apparently,
he might come out with his own SUV next.
I kind of like that idea, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
They have an episode that was planned for next week with Gary Cole, who is going to play a Donald Trump-like character. But they decided to put the episode off because they thought it looked bad in the middle of the election. The thing that's always so interesting about Law & Order, it's always, you know, ripped from the headlines, and they're always taking the pieces. And, of course, they're very quick to say, always based on a fictional account, not actually a true real-life character. But the characters look very real. There's no denying buying that. So they basically said, you know, this looks a little bit weird with everything that's going on now. We're going to hold it off till after the election. I'm not aware of another time where they've held an episode because of something like that. Maybe it happened, but I can't remember one, and I've watched the show for a long time. So I think it's really interesting the fact that that's coming full circle and an episode of Law & Order SVU is being held because of what's going on.
I think that's probably a good idea. Stay out of it for a while.
Exactly.
I just flew back from Ireland last week. We had a great group of WGN listeners, and one of the things on Aer Lingus were the announcements to leave your Galaxy 7s at home. If you have one, to keep it. Now, at the time, I think they said you just have to turn it off. Since then, there's been an order from the FAA that you can't bring it on the plane at all?
The order from the FAA says that it is now a federal crime to fly with a device. So it's absolutely huge. And the thing that's so fascinating about it is if you bring a Note 7 onto a plane and you are caught, you are subject to civil penalties up to $180,000 and could be prosecuted for fines and up to 10 years in jail.
Wow.
And it's crazy because I actually saw friends who were posting the other day. They were sitting next to people with Samsung phones and they didn't know which phone was which, and they were worried that it was a Note 7 and something was going to happen. It's literally become something where people are afraid to be near these phones.
That's a pretty amazing thing. And I know there was a story earlier that Samsung is actually exchanging them at airports for people or allowing them to take other phones if they want to. But
to take other phones and to find ways to detonate them, for lack of a better word, because they, if you send them back, they don't know what's gonna set it off.
It's a crazy process. You didn't say detonate, did you?
I did. I didn't really mean it to be detonate, but it is pretty much, you know, you never know. You put it in an envelope, what's going to happen next?
Not an easy thing for a business to recover from, I would imagine.
That's for sure.
Scott Kleinberg, great to talk to you again. I appreciate it. Let's do it again next Monday.
Sounds great, Steve. Thank you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:51. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, beef jerky. When's the last time you had beef jerky? It's the fastest growing snack food in the U.S. And one of the guys who's hoping it grows even faster is Ricky Hirsch, the man behind Think Jerky. He's in the studio with us now. Ricky, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so what is it about? What drew you to beef jerky?
I mean, I love beef jerky, right? Doesn't everybody love beef jerky?
My son loves beef jerky.
I like your son, though.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's a good dude.
But you know, he's buying what's the principal brand?
Jack Link's, probably.
Exactly. Right. And but your jerky is very different from that, right? It's a little bit more health conscious, I guess.
Yeah. So your son is friends with Gio.
Yeah, Gio, right?
So Gail Gann's son, and so we're healthy jerky, and each one's made by a different celebrity chef in Chicago, and we got Gio through Gail because Gail was tired of buying Jack Link's for Gio. It's all salt and sugar, and she wanted to make a healthier option because she was buying it all the time for her son. So that's what we did. So we only use grass-fed beef or free-range turkey. It's half the salt, half the sugar, and then each one's in a single serving bag. So the whole bag's 100 calories, 16 grams of protein, and only 6 carbs. So it's literally one of the healthiest things you can eat.
I was going to say, it's a power food if you do it correctly.
If you do it correctly, it's probably one of the healthiest things you can eat. It's literally just turkey or beef with just flavor. But we cut out all the bad stuff, and now it's just really healthy.
Why is the bad stuff in there? So it can last forever? I mean, if it's jerky, it would last forever anyway, right?
Right. I mean, you can go to the gas station, things are there for 5 years. But the real reason it makes it a lot cheaper, so people don't realize there's a lot of sugar in beef jerky. And the reason is sugar is cheaper than grass-fed or beef. So in essence, you're eating sugar as opposed to beef, and that's what cuts the cost down. We're a more expensive product. It's called Think Jerky. And the reason is not necessarily because it's made by some of the best chefs in the country. It's because we make it with lower sugar.
So you mentioned Gail Gann, and she comes up with the one or two of the marinades, right, for the jerky. And then you've partnered with other chefs as well?
Right. So we have 4 flavors and 3 chefs. And we're actually the first company ever to do this. And we're a Chicago company. We're very proud of that. So we have 4 flavors and 3 chefs. One is Gail Gann, who's Michelin star winner, 2-time James Beard winner, 9-year Food Network host, Chicago Hall of Fame. One is Chef Matt Trost, who's the chef at Charlatan and Three Aces, and he's a 2-time Bacon Fest champ. And our third chef, some say, is the best chef in the world. He is a 3-star Michelin chef from L2O. His name is Laurent Gras.
Things are taking off for you.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Faster than you expected? I can't imagine you'd expect it to go this fast.
I expected it to go
You did, fast. Really? Yeah.
We made everything on scale from the start.
So I read somewhere that you were hoping to get $1 million in revenue this year.
Correct.
Are you on pace for that?
We probably just hit it like today. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So we only launched 11 months ago. I think we've done $1 million in sales. We're tracking like $10 million for next year. We have one employee. Things are pretty crazy. We just launched in Starbucks. So if anybody goes to that coffee company, that great coffee company, you can find us in Starbucks. We're white, clean, modern packaging.
Tell me about that, because I would imagine there are a lot of products that want to get into Starbucks. How did you do that?
Everybody wants to get into Starbucks. There's nothing like Starbucks. They have 20 products that they sell outside of their own. So it's probably like, it's like the unicorn. You know, one of my chefs, Matt Trost, asked me, like, what's the one company you want to get into? That's like your unicorn. I was like, it's Starbucks, because it's almost unattainable. I mean, that was a story 80 years in the making, and it happened to do that Gail knew someone who got us a test, and we weren't even, it was a long story.
Right.
But we did get into GNC. We're the fastest company ever into GNC, and that's a cool story, because I literally sent a bag of jerky to GNC's corporate headquarters, attention snack buyer. I didn't even know if they had one. It turns out they did.
To a little bit may concern to the hungriest person in the office. Yeah.
Exactly. It somehow got in the right hands. Now we just launched in every GNC.
Okay, so what are you telling me then? That this was the perfect product for the perfect moment? Or, right? It sort of seems like you've come along at best absolute time.
Yes, I think we are probably the most on-trend product in the hottest growing sector in the country. It wasn't an overnight thing. It took me personally 2 years to do everything. I designed, made everything myself. But I think we're probably the most on-trend product right now. Jerky is hot. The chef thing is unique. But what we did is we did it different. Like, jerky is the hottest snack in the country, like you said, and that's a statistic. But it's the same thing over and over. It's gas station truckers and men.
We talked about, right, I was going to say, we talked about two high school boys probably in their basement eating beef jerky.
Exactly.
But women buy more jerky than men?
Correct. It's like a little known secret that women like jerky just as much as men. It just was never socially acceptable. So that's what we wanted to change. And I had that idea 2 years ago, this vision of a female walking out of a gym and eating a bag of jerky. Everybody laughed at me. Now they want to quit their jobs.
We started the show talking about a doctor for the Blackhawks, Ari Levy, I think, if I recall his name, starting sort of a wholeness center at River North, where you meet with a doctor, you have a workout regimen and all of that. And that's sort of what it strikes me that that's where the jerky belongs. I mean, you're selling a tasty health food that used to be considered sort of a nasty snack.
I mean, that's exactly it. And there's two camps of people. There's the ones who get it right away. I mean, everybody else is selling jerky. What we're selling is health. You don't have to sell jerky because jerky sells itself. We love it. What we're selling is 100 calories and 16 grams of protein, which happens to be jerky, a snack we all love, which happens to be crafted by one of the best chefs in the world. That's the hierarchy of our information, and that's why the success is there so quickly, because it's a differentiated product.
About $1 million this year. What's next year?
We're tracking $10 million, but I only have one employee, so, you know, we need help.
So you're hiring. You're hiring. And
we are hiring all positions.
Ricky Hirsch, very much a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate it coming in. Well, I wish you continued success, but it seems inevitable.
Nah, you never know.
What would you do next?
In terms of what?
I don't know. Is there another food product that you have your eye on? I mean,
we do. I think we're creating a brand. So right now we're starting with.
I think you are too.
You know, I have this vision of where we want to go, and it's creating a brand that revolves around the chef. So what we've done is, if you go and you buy a bag, you flip over the bag, and each chef is on the back of that specific flavor. So the chef is not the brand itself.
Right.
The chefs are collectives in our brands. They're all partners. We have
a
new
chef coming.
So bringing
chefs to a more common food is sort of the brand in a way.
I think so. I think the future in CPG is collaborative. I think it's going to be bringing on chefs and artists or whatever. But we're in this together. There's no one chef who's the brand. And so this allows us, we have a new chef coming in 2 months who's probably the most popular chef in Chicago. And then we're going to expand with chefs in different markets. But that also allows us the opportunity to get into new products, because we're not just jerky. We are Think, which is the overall brand.
Check it out. Think Jerky. That's Ricky
Starbucks.
Hirsch. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.